Hello, and welcome to episode 204 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa, and I'm joined by Matthew Figueroa.
Thought you were going to intro your cats, because
I was very close.
We
so
watching
tempted.
Chaos unfold.
I was like, joined by my cat. He's just an agent of chaos right now.
A few minutes
on my desk.
Leading up to us going live, you best believe. Well, if you're watching the video feed, there's a tail. In just every now and then, this cat is.
Look at this! What is going on
some
here?
Actual chaos here, live.
What is going on?
There's a bushy tail whacking Alessandra's face. It's great.
We were setting up for like half an hour and she wasn't here. Literally a few seconds before we go live, she's like, oh, sup?
Cats can smell the opportunity. Have you had it yet where... So I think everyone's deepest, darkest dream is to have a cat have a full-on sleep on them. Like you're sitting down.
Of course. That's the ultimate dream.
Laying on bed, for example, and then your cat will come lie on your chest for a bit, get love, but then not usually fall asleep on you. Not all cats. Except, you know, there'll be times when you're like, oh, please just stay, and they don't.
Yeah.
But then there's the time you lay in the bed for like 5 minutes. You're like, okay, I'm just gonna lie, and then they come like, I'm gonna have a nap now. You're like, but I'm gonna get up.
On your
I'm
chest.
Get up.
I'm just gonna nap.
I'm gonna get
on your
up
chest.
In the next 5 minutes. That, why do you choose now? And this is exactly what's happening.
Yeah, they she knows. They choose. They march to the beat of their own drum. Oh my goodness! And I nearly just ended the recording there because she stood on my mouse. They literally do just kind of. Do what the fuck they want. I've had to learn that very quickly because I'm used to dogs who are there to please you. Cats are super not that. Cats are not there to please you. You are there to please your cat when it suits them.
They'll never change because Lupin's he's 11 going on 12 and he's
Lupin's
very
relatively friendly though. Like I know, he loves
people and attention, but What I'm getting at is that he'll never break his habits. Like I can't feed him. So if let's say dinner time's at 6, okay, he'll always scream at me at 5. And doesn't matter that for the last 2-3 years I've held out and always fed him at 6. At 5, he'll always come and scream at me. I'm like, why?
He's like,
just know
feed
that
me
it's
now.
Not time.
Feed me.
It's not
right
time.
Now.
And of course, this, I'm sure we've covered this before, but this translates into morning feedings as well.
Oh, that yeah, four, of course.
That 4 to 5 a.m. morning slot doesn't change.
I was losing my fucking mind with our two kittens earlier this week because I don't know what got into them, but they decided to... When we first got them, they were very, like, at night, they were terrors because they would just come and bug us all the time. And then they sort of, like, settled. And then this week they just decided to go back to that crazy phase again. It was just like 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. They were like both on us, just like vibrating and just making noise and licking us and biting us. Because Abby, she does this thing where if she licks your hand and you don't like reciprocate, she just bites you. Just like, so when you're sleeping, that's quite a shock to the system.
Yeah,
when you are literally in a dream and you just get this fucking bite on your hand. I don't know why. Yeah,
I've reached the point in my life where I'm getting up every morning now at 3, 4, 5, whatever, and I'm forgetting about it the next day. There'll be something that happens, and I'm like, oh yeah, I got up last night and I fed them and I scrolled for 5 minutes, 10 minutes because I was wide awake, you know, before I fell asleep.
I think the same has happened to Shani with regards to feeding them because she's normally the one that gets up at like 3 or 4 to like give them some pellets or whatever. And it's just like a thing that she's adapted to now. But I think the cats, just like Lupin at night, just they forget what time things are meant to be. So they just come at like 1 a.m. and they're like, oh, it's time. And you're like, no.
My worst though is like, cool, okay, I'll feed you. It's fine. You want food? Cool. I hate getting up, going to their bowl, and there's food there.
Oh, of course. It's always like that.
And then without fail, they'll like look at me and be like, oh, thanks. I'm like, but it was there the whole time. Although I've since learned that, I don't know how true this is or where it stems from, but apparently Cats do that on purpose because they feel safe.
Someone's watching them eat.
So they some of them know, but they choose to have you there with them because it's like a safety thing. It's dark, it's late, I'm going to eat, you must just guard me. In Lupin's defense, we've had it once. I mean, you know our cottage, the kitchen door leads right into the kitchen and their food bowl's there.
Yes, yes.
Lupin's had it once where when you first moved him here, Martha did come strolling down and she ran into the cottage and tried to murder him while he was eating. So he's got some PTSD.
So he's like, I know exactly how dangerous this can be.
It's actually quite sad. You'll see when he eats, he's like often nervous. So if someone walks in, he's always like looking at the door. Yeah.
Shame, man.
I should put the bowl that he can just face the door.
Yeah. So you can always see it. Yeah.
It's not like always looking over his shoulder like, oh my God, what's going on?
I always thought that cats didn't like they asked you for more food because they were like, oh, the pellets in my bowl are stale now. I don't want to eat these stale pellets. Because like we get to the end of the day or to like the next feed and there's still pellets in their bowl, but they're not eating it. So we like put it out, we keep it in a little mug and we do like half new food and half recycled old food. And they just like couldn't give a shit.
You know what you must do? Here's a life hack. Sprinkle some water on it. Just a bit.
Water? Go,
yeah, because then they go, oh man, this is wet food. And you're like, ha, you fool. It's just pellets that have been wet.
Huh, okay.
Because we had a cat years ago that, I don't know, so over the years we've learned to bring up our cats certain ways where now Lupin and Luna don't enjoy wet food, like at all.
Okay. But
just because we were strict and mostly gave them dry food.
Yeah.
In the years prior with previous cats, we had it the wrong way around, not the wrong way around, but we had it the other way around where we gave them wet food too regularly that they refused to eat dry food. So how we got around that was, you know, if the cat saw the dry pellets, they're like, this is unacceptable. Like, yeah, hang on.
This is dry.
I'll take it back
food
to the kitchen and see what I can do. sprinkle some water on, bring it back. Like, this is satisfactory. And then I'll eat.
We do very little, well, like a teaspoon of wet food only in their dinner feeds. And they seem to be fine with that. Like,
yeah, but that's fine. It's just, I know from my experience that I made the mistake of giving too much wet food. Dry food was just not an option. And you can't just feed them wet food all the time.
I do know exactly what you mean. Because when I lived with my parents, it was the same thing. It was like breakfast and dinner. We were going through a tin of like that, you know, wet food a day on the cats. Like, yeah, I don't think they just ever ate pellets.
That you can't do that. It's just it works out to be quite pricey.
Yeah, just accept your fate. Yeah, you've made your bed. Yeah.
You've made your wet cat food bed.
You've made your wet cat food, yeah. They're very cute. So we do this thing where we take out the food. I take out with a teaspoon. And then I let them lick the spoon because, hey, it's a pre-wash for the dishwasher. Like, I'm going to put that thing in the dishwasher. I don't want to rinse it with my hands. It's they're earning their keep. So
it's
the small things. Work. They fucking love it as well.
That takes washing up dishes to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. You know, let the cats pre-wash, yeah. My parents used to do the same. I mean, this is probably very disgusting to some people, but I don't give a fuck. But like when my mom would be packing the dishwasher, we'd often have our two little sausage dogs like fucking standing on the door, just like licking everything that goes in there. And my mom's like, well, it's going to get washed. So
yeah, look, I completely get the like ick factor.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the dishwasher is going to laser beam.
It fucking blasts with soap and hot water and steam and.
Yeah.
I mean, if I lick the plate, that's actually more dirty.
That's so disgusting.
Just sits on my all fours licking all the fucking plates as they go into the dishwasher. Pre-wash, yeah.
That is a visual I'll never get out of my head. My goodness. Things I didn't expect to visualize this morning. Good Lord.
Let's check one chat, talk about pre-washing dishes and video games. Dishwashers are a lifesaver. I do not know why we took so long to buy one. It was an absolute fucking game changer.
I'd love to have one, but I've since learned that our space is too small and washing dishes is okay. I think
If you ever get a bigger space in my life, though,
where I'm like, I'll wash the dishes. I'm like, who am I?
The thing is, it's not the dishes that used to bug me. It's all the things I used to cook the food.
Oh my God. Life hack. You should wash while you cook. Always.
Oh, fuck that. No, I don't have time.
No, I'm telling you. If like something's simmering for a few minutes, wash the breadboard that you cut bread on or the knife you used for butter.
It'll change your life. I used to hate making bolognese because it was an absolute nightmare to clean because it was like this thick tomato-y sauce that was on this, like, in this, like, dish and bowl. And then you've got the spaghetti bowl and then you've got the bowls that you've eaten on and they're all, like, tomato-y and it's just like, I love this meal, but I actually hate cooking it because cleaning it is a disaster. Dishwashers, really cool. And I used to think like, oh, packing them and unpacking them is just as bad as doing dishes. No, it's not.
Oh, hell no. That shit's so quick.
It is unbelievable. If you are diligent for just packing, every time you use something, pack it, and then you unpack everything once,
I have flashbacks to my childhood. My mom asking me to unpack the dishwasher. It was the worst thing she could ask me. I'd be like, I can't believe you've done that. Looking back now, I'm like, it takes 5 minutes.
Absolute betrayal at most. As a child. You're just like, this is fucking awful.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
I used to think the same thing. Yeah. Now, like you said, it's easy. I almost find it like a puzzle game. I'm just like, how many things can I put in my hand? So that I don't have to come here as many times.
Before we actually talk about games, I do laugh. My father-in-law, we often tease him or take advantage because he packs the dishwasher like perfectly. Like he's got a system. Okay.
I love him. I love him already. If you put something in wrong,
he's like, no, like it has to go here. But it's become so bad now. We're like, Tom, why don't you pack the dishwasher? You just know it so well.
Oh no, he's become too good at it.
I told Lenske and my mom-in-law, I'm like, you guys are cruel. Like, it's such a weak way out.
and they know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. But I understand like, it at the same time because a poorly packed one is awful.
No, but I'm like, are you ever going to learn how to pack the dishwasher? Like, it's not complicated. I get why he wants certain things in certain places. Look, I'm doing it the way he wants it. it's a solid strategy.
Like,
it is.
All the good things in life, if you're like, someone else can do this for me and they do it better, I'm just not going to learn. It's the whole teach a man how to fish as opposed to just giving him fish. If I'm just given fish, I have no reason to learn how to fish.
You've just explained the older generation and their fear of technology.
Fuck, you're they can right, learn. Actually, yeah.
They can learn.
They just choose not to. But us younger people can do it.
Sorry, we'll get to the podcast at some point. This is my last story. When I lived with my mom, the number of times I'd walk into our study, and then as soon as I walk in, she'd be like, how do I do this? I'm like,
you're like, why did I walk
you,
in here?
What were you doing before I walked in? Like you were
just waiting.
You were doing your thing without help, but because I'm here now, it's just easier to make me do it.
Of course.
Because I'm like, what, were you just sitting here for the last hour not knowing how to do this? Like you were absolutely fine.
So it was the same with me last week. My dad was like, because my dad is in Cape Town, and he's like, oh, you should go visit your mom on the weekend. I'm like, cool, yeah, well. He's like, oh, also, the internet's not working. Could you help fix it? It took me like two hours to fix it while I was there because all these smart routers now, like Google connected ones, when Google decides to change an app, then it's like, cool, you need to reset these things all individually, and they all take 10 minutes each to reset, and then you need to rebound. Fucking hell, geez.
Worst.
Google, why are you like this? You're a multi-billion dollar company. If you change apps, just make it work, please.
Yeah.
Save me my Sundays, please.
Yes. Speaking of saving Sundays.
Video games.
We were almost there and we pivoted back, but we're back now.
We were close. Yeah, we were close to the brink. We're back. Jesus Christ, there's been a lot of games out this week. Just an absolute deluge of games. Just I think we said it last week, but the meme of
help.
Sweeping back water back into the ocean as the tide comes
in.
It's how it feels, but we can confirm
that we have received Boy Simulator, the sequel.
God of War.
So we're allowed to say Ragnarok. We've got it. Cannot say anything past that, but very grateful for the long lead time because I think
super grateful
in November.
Super grateful.
We should have it wrapped up for a review.
And I mean, we got it later than
other people, yeah.
Other people, but even then, it's still like a massive lead time. It's like super nice. It's a real.
Talking about the new God of War, that wasn't clear.
Oh, God of War Ragnarok. That's the one.
I just realized people are like, boy simulators?
Yeah, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
So we've got that in the background, but we're not talking about that today.
No. Yeah, when's the embargo? 4th of November.
I think it's 3rd or 4th of November.
3rd of November. So it's like
11th-ish.
Yeah. It's like two weeks or no, it's not 2 weeks. It's like just shy of 2 weeks. Yeah.
We could actually talk about it next week technically because previews have gone up. So
yeah, I guess I think the preview window is like the first 5 hours or something like that.
Yeah, come back next week for some early impressions on Boy.
Boy simulator.
Or teenager. Because he's old.
Yeah,
now.
But there's a bunch that has launched. Where do we even start? What did we say we're starting with? I totally forgot.
Gotham Knights.
Oh, let's that's talk the about one. Yeah, that's
old Gotham.
We're gonna start from the bottom and then just get progressively better with the game quality. I'm just gonna say that.
You're setting the bar up there, but just so we actually got code for this earlier as well, which I was not expecting. Gotham Knights launched.
Did we though? We just got it like the Friday beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, we got it a week early though, which is quite nice. So Gotham Knights launched, I think, yesterday.
I'm sorry, what is happening with Batgirl here?
What do you mean?
She looks... What fucking suit is this? I haven't seen this shit. Is this the gear system in effect?
It's in effect.
This is awful.
There are lots of different outfits, but we will get there. So,
okay, sorry. It just took me by surprise because I was like, I don't recall this at all.
Oh my God. Never mind. Gotham Knights. So for those of you who don't know, Gotham Knights is... I almost want to call it a pseudo sequel, but it's not at all tied to the Arkham games. Mm-hmm. It is made by Warner Brothers Montreal, who made Arkham Origins, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a good Arkham game. Yeah.
So this is a Batman game, and spoiler if you didn't know, Batman's dead. They literally tell you that in the marketing. You see it in the opening cutscene. Like, Batman's literally dead.
Yeah, it's not really but this a secret, is, yeah.
In this, I suppose, take on the Batman build, we're far enough that Batman has obviously trained up his whole cluster of proteges and follow-up heroes. So we've got Batgirl, Red Hood, Robin, and Nightwing. Three Robins and a Batgirl. Ready to look after Gotham in the wake of Batman's death. And it's far enough because you know, if you want to like really get into the nitty gritty, I know that Batgirl eventually becomes Oracle at some stage, but this is set after that even where she becomes Oracle and now she recovers and she's Batgirl again. So it's like, it's pretty far along if you want
to. Oh yeah. They actually make mention of like her getting like, stuff to help her spine and everything.
Yeah, so yeah. It's pretty far along in this take on Gotham. So, yeah. In the wake of Batman's death, he's murdered, basically, and he has an unsolved case, which you and all the other knights need to solve, and that is the window dressing for what is a pretty average...
Where the fuck did that bike come from? Jesus.
It is the window setting for a... Sorry to say, pretty average game. Gotham Knights in early reveals and early gameplay videos, it didn't look good. I think we were both very vocal on we're not sure how this game's going to pan out. But I was always cautiously optimistic because the thing is, some games just don't look good to play until you play them. But having now rolled credits in the game, it doesn't look good to play and it is not great to play. Like it's I think you hit the nail on the head when you said this game is aggressively average.
It is. I mean, this is not a big portion of the game, but the footage that's playing right now is a really good indicator of like what is going on here. Like
no, so I'm chasing this
bike is going maybe 10 kilometers an hour, yeah, but it's got so, it's got the speed lines from 10 anime fucking bombarding the screen to try and tell you that it's actually
it's
fast.
So fast. Yeah, like, I think we could start there on that. Just the game doesn't feel good. I don't know. It's a lot of it
doesn't feel good.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to hit the nail on the head of why exactly. But it just doesn't. So like the Bat Bike is a good starting point where, you know, you've got sandbox Gotham City to explore, and obviously you need to traverse around. And one of the means of getting around is the Bat Bike, which you think, shit, this is Batman's bike. It must be fast as fuck, boy.
Must blitz. Go. Yeah.
But it doesn't. Like, you get on the bike, and as you described, you've got the visual effects of, wow, you know, look at the fast lines, the blur, the music ramps up, but you barely overtake
going
the cars.
So slowly. It's so
you like
weird.
Drive alongside a car, kid looks like, oh my god, it's Batgirl, and you're
and
like,
it's like so
barely overtake.
It's not like a nitpick, it's like so obvious from the first time it happens. I was like, am I not pressing accelerator correctly? Like, is something wrong? It's just it's weird. Like, and then
but
I think the combat is the strangest
I was
part
say,
of
that,
game.
That translates to combat, where even that you know the early demos of this game, you thought combat doesn't look great, but again, maybe it feels better to play. But combat looks sluggish, and let me tell you, it feels sluggish as well.
Yeah.
I think the idea is that they're trying to emphasize, you know, combat's brutal and heavy. Like I think they're trying to convey a weight to all the blows. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like, I don't know, if I compare it to, so I never played Arkham Knight, but I've played Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Played a bit
it's
of
not
Arkham
that.
Origins.
It's that, super
yeah,
not that.
You know that combat's fast, but you can still feel the weight. Like, oh my God, Batman's giving a beat down in these guys, and he's fluid, you know? The combat, it just feels so like slow and heavy, and it does it like not in a good way, not in
so
a good way at all.
It feels so unresponsive. It just feels like I'm waiting a really strange amount of time between pressing a button and an action taking place. And even then, the animation feels like it's playing out super slowly with regards to how I would expect action combat to happen. Yeah. So like, you know, this is not it's not even a fair comparison. So like the Arkham games have a completely different combat system. So I don't even think comparing them, like, they're just different.
It's not fair, but
they're trying different things. But if this game was going for something like weighty, you can look at something like Elden Ring and be like, that's weighty, but it's responsive. It feels like when I press a button, something happens. You know what I mean? Or at least there's a predictability to what is happening. Like, if I've got a massive sword, then I know, cool, it's going to have a long windup. Here, it's like, you press square for Batgirl to swing her nightstick, and it just takes an inordinate amount of time to like actually connect with someone. And the same thing with the enemy attacks. They just feel like they're going through molasses the entire time. It's so weird.
But even on that front, so what they try to do, oh my God, the scene playing out, if you're a video viewer, this is a ridiculous mission.
Clayface.
With enemies as well, what they try to do is add variation of, like, you know, a typical action game. It'll be like, oh, this is a hero carrying a shield. You need to do a heavy attack to break their stance, for example. They introduce ideas like that, but it looks good on paper, but they don't execute it properly. It feels awful. Like, there are enemies at a later stage where it's like, oh, you need to do a heavy ranged attack to knock them down. But the thing is, like, so imagine three of them are fighting you at one time. Okay, so you'll do a heavy range attack, but you only manage to knock one of them down. Then the other two line up, you do a heavy range attack to knock them down. But you knock those two down, but the one that is knocked down gets up because you damaged him. I'm like, okay. Like, I can't get damage on these guys because they're not knocked down and they keep getting up. It just executes it poorly. Like, that's just one example of me going, oh my God, this is so frustrating. There are many instances of that where you can only do damage to certain enemies if certain conditions are met, or you do certain things to knock them down. And I get it, like, it's meant to add variation, but it ends up making combat a chore, and I don't know, just very frustrating in certain instances.
It's a real, I can tell that the idea behind it is like, okay, we can't have the free-flowing combat from an Arkham game because we have this gear system, which is meant to like how do you have that if you have gear that is meant to change the damage attributes and stuff? So it's like, cool, here's this action combat that is meant to take all of that into account so that fighting single enemies is harder. But then, by all accounts, from what I've heard you and Darren and Jeff say, it's like the gear is so inconsequential to the game that you're hitting and killing enemies with one or two hits anyway. So
look, I think it depends on what level you are. So like Darren, for example, I know he did a lot of the side content, that by which point when he did main quests, he was doing too much damage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other way around, I was trying to mainline the game to, you know, roll credits before this episode. I was underleveled for certain quests, so it meant me having to hit the enemies a lot more. I think the gear system's problem is that it feels like a Windows setting. It doesn't add value. It's there. You can look at it and be like, oh, cool. But every time you level up, you end up getting new gear anyway, which I found a bit strange because you can craft gear. So there were times I'm like, oh, cool, I leveled up. Oh, I've got a new outfit in my inventory, which has way better stats, but I can also craft something that's very similar. Like, why did I get given something? And then even then it's like, okay, cool. Here's a weapon that does ice damage. Like,
yeah,
that's nice to have. But at no point was I going, like, let me juggle this gear. I could have a fire damage build, an ice damage build, whatever. It's just I used whatever was strongest at the time. And you get drip fed so much gear anyway, and it feels like, why is this here? The only instance that makes sense to me is like, if a game has end game content, like a raid boss or something, where then you can go and min-max and, you know, try get certain builds, whatever. It doesn't fit here. Like, I don't know at any point what is the end game content here where it's going like, oh, you get to fight this boss, but you need the best gear to do that.
I'm
like, well, then what's the point? It's there, but it doesn't add anything to the game. So it's a bit weird. It feels like an afterthought, I guess. It's like one of those things where, you know, modern day games must have lots of RPG elements and gear because that's what people want. But even that, it's not like I'm fighting enemies and they're dropping items. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm grinding out, oh my God, this Clayface dropped a gold tier bat suit. Wow, amazing. It's not that. There's no dopamine hits when I don't feel like I'm getting stronger.
It just feels like a weird thing to include in a game like this. I never understood the gear inclusion, and it always seemed like the combat was built around the idea of gear, and because the gear system was bad, the combat suffered as a result.
With things like that, like, I think there's no harm in adding RPG light systems to a game like this, but then there are smarter ways to do it. Like, if you said to me, here's a skill tree where you can now learn different combos with each hero. You know, like, here's a square, square, square attack. Here's a square, square, square triangle combo. Like, that's cool. Because then you feel like, oh, my hero's progressing. I'm getting stronger. You don't need to tie to a gear system. But I mean, that's just nitpicking. Now, like, you know, games are different and all that different interpretations. But yeah, it's just such a pity because I think the world here, like, the world of Gotham is interesting. I mean, I know a lot of people love Batman and just this setting with all the different villains and, you know, whatnot. It just feels squandered, which is sad. I don't know. Feels like it's just such wasted potential. If you think of what the Arkham games have done for DC and that franchise as a whole, you know, introduce more. Yeah. Like, I can tell you, I had a base understanding of Batman from the movies. I've never read the comics, but Arkham Asylum and Arkham City really broadened my knowledge in that, you know, I played the game, got introduced to villains, read a lot of the bios and the lore pieces. I was like, damn, I learned about Calendar Man, which I never knew about before. The world is so interesting, but then you get this and it's like, I don't know.
It doesn't add to that same, even though it's a new universe, like it just doesn't add to the same
thing. I will say on that front, if you are someone who loves Gotham and that, you know, the setting, there are a lot of nice little Easter eggs and lore bits. Like, you can go into certain areas and you can read up on, you know, spoiler, the Court of Owls, which is one of the main antagonists in this game, learn mm-hmm. little bits and pieces about them. You can go mm-hmm. to certain parts of the map which reference X, Y, and Z, and that's really cool. Like, I can't fault them on that. There's definitely those bits in this game, mm-hmm. if that's mm-hmm. what you want from the Batman game. But yeah, it's
just... Do you have to only play as the... Like, can you just play as one character?
You can.
You can. Okay.
I actually wanted to touch on that. That it's interesting. Like, well, we'll give the team credit, is that if you choose to main a certain hero, it feels like, well, it doesn't feel like, I can tell you that there are specific cutscenes or instances which I think are specifically tailored to that hero. Like, mm-hmm. I've had villains saying to Barbara, like, oh, Barbara, like, your dad would be X, Y, Z. I'm like, oh, like, this is specifically for this her, hero. Yeah. You know, it's okay. Not like generic flavor text of, ha, Detective Gordon would be rolling in his grave. It's like, no, that's her father. Like, it's definitely speaking to her specifically.
Yes.
So, I mean, I haven't obviously played the game four times, but I imagine that there are specific instances of that where you could obviously mix and match heroes as you want, which is quite nice, is that as you level up, all heroes level up. It's not a mm-hmm. thing of, oh, my Batgirl's level 10, but my Robin's level 1. Like, all of them will be level 10. So you mm-hmm, can, mm-hmm. you know, pick up and play as you want. I think that there's distinct dialogue. And, you know, I mean, not for every part of the game, but in certain parts there is unique flavor text for each hero, which is nice. Like, that's, I give the team credit on that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think they had to record, you know,
dialogue
and
for
stuff
that, yeah.
for four versions of the game, essentially.
Yes, which, yes.
Like, that's really cool. Yeah, but you, like, to answer your question, you can definitely mix and match on the fly. For what it's worth, I played a bit with everyone, and Batgirl, weirdly enough, unanimously from everyone I've spoken to, is the best to play. She just feels like a good balance of fast and damage.
Mm-hmm.
Red Hood, to me, I'm like, it's not fun just tapping triangle to shoot.
Yeah.
There
seems to be a real consensus that Red Hood is just done dirty in this game, and he's just an awful character to play as. Yeah. Bummer. Yeah. Listen, it's like you said, it's not entirely unexpected. I think if you had been following this game, there was just something not right with it for a very long time. It's a bummer that we waited this long for a new Batman game, because it's been 7 years since Arkham Knight, and this is just super not it.
And to be clear, like, it's not a bad game. Like, it's not bad, but it's just not particularly good.
Yeah.
So average is like the perfect description. I think some people are definitely going to get enjoyment out of it, because, you know, it is fun to explore Gotham and play as heroes, but just the way, like, we've discussed combat and how certain things work just doesn't feel good. The gear system, like,
this is probably what people thought the Arkham series would have been before it came out, and it was just like ridiculously good.
But you know what? It's interesting, because I think if this game came out, you know, if Arkham Knight came out and this game followed like 2 years later, let's say, for whatever reason, it might have been fun. It just feels like by modern day standards, this feels dated.
Yeah, dated open world design.
It's just dated. Dated open world design. Combat just isn't 100%.
Yeah.
So modern day, like, it doesn't stand tall. But I think in some alternate reality where this followed as a sequel to Arkham Knight, like, I think it might have been a really good game.
I've seen some people say it's very PS3, Xbox 360 era type of open world design, which is like really damning. It's like, yeah, we've moved well beyond the sort of lifeless world checklist sort of shit on a map. Like, that's not what open worlds are anymore. Only the bad ones are like that. So,
yeah.
Bummer.
Well, there we go. That's Gotham Knights.
Not sure if I'll be playing much more of that. I'll be dead on.
I know. I did roll credits. So just last thing I'll say on it, I mainlined the game. It took me about 12 to 14 hours, but there's a ton of side content. I know Darren he threw out a number about 30 hours.
So yeah, I've seen a lot of that in some other reviews, like 30 hours to kind of like there do is everything. Side
content to dive into. We have to do other cases. And yeah, like the, in terms of content, it's there. There is a fair bit to get through if you choose to do so.
If that is your goal, I guess, is just content, then yeah.
Cool. Yeah. But that's Gotham Knights. Aggressively that is average.
Gotham Knights, yeah.
Hit the nail on the head there.
As soon as I started seeing how aggressively average it was after playing about an hour of it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to move on to stuff that is actually fun to play. And that this week for me has been Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Yeah, because I think people have been saying this sparks joy, and that's why it's completely messed my brain up. Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. This game fucking rules. This game is good. Like, probably one of the best I've played this year, and one of the best I've played on Switch in a very long time. So if you're unfamiliar, this is the sequel to Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle, came out in the 2017, the year the Switch launched. And that one was, for all intents and purposes, a really, really smart mashup of Mario, Rabbids, and XCOM. It was quite linear. You moved, you know, between areas, and then had battles where it was very tile based. You know, you moved a certain number of tiles, you attacked a certain number of tiles, you had half cover, full cover, all of that stuff. I think what got people with the first one was it was a very light adaptation of XCOM, like not as grueling and brutal, but it also captured the feeling of Mario. Like, it felt like a Mario game, you know, in terms of visuals and design and stuff like that. So, you know, Sparks of Hope very much, I think, maintains that sort of vibe, but it has dramatically changed the gameplay. So you now explore basically different planets, which are different hubs, and they are like open world, very small open world Mario levels, where there's like side quests to do, there's small puzzles to solve, you collect coins. You see Goombas and Bomb-Bombs like walking around, and they initiate battles and stuff like that. It's very, very Mario still. Looks beautiful, very punchy. So yeah, from that perspective, really cool. The battles now don't take place within the world. Whenever you initiate a battle, it like transports you to another place where the battle takes place, like on an arena. But I think that's where the biggest change has taken place, and the one that I like the most. They have evolved the XCOM formula in such a clever way by removing tiles, essentially. So what happens now is each of your characters in your party, it's increased to three pretty quickly. They have like an area where they can move freely. So you can move your characters freely in that area and stop them or let them take cover anywhere freely in that area. But you can also swap between your characters freely as well. So your turn sequence is entirely dictated by you. You can do a thing like move Luigi right to the edge of his movement area and then move Mario right next to him. And then Mario can initiate a team jump, which allows it to jump in the air and go beyond where his movement grid is. So you can like really get you. And then you can do the same thing with like your third character. And so you can chain together these big movements within single turns that allow you to really maneuver around the battlefield really well.
Yeah. So if you're watching the video footage, it's actually this video we've got playing is showing that now.
They do a very good job in the trailers of kind of explaining this. And then you can do all sorts of things like, oh, if you upgrade Mario to do like an attack while he's hovering, then he'll bounce back up. And you can continue hovering. So you can actually do damage while moving even further. Or if you get close enough to like a row of Goombas, you can use a dash attack, which doesn't take one of your turn counters, and attack them and then move afterwards as well. So it sounds like it makes things easier. What it actually does is make the strategy way more complex. Because you've got to think about, cool, as soon as I attack, I can no longer move. So do I want to move everyone into place and then make sure they're within range of each other and then do like a big buff attack and then move them afterwards to place, you know, areas of attack? How do I comprise my team? Do I have a long range guy, a guy that gets up close, a healer, stuff like that? It's really, really good. And I think the battles do a really good job of forcing you to really examine your strategy. There are difficulty levels. So if you're really just in it for the good vibes and the breezy combat like the first one, because the first one I thought was quite easy from what I played, you can notch down to the difficulty. But on the medium difficulty, like, there have been definitely battles where I'm like, yeah, I feel almost over-leveled for this. But there are ones where I'm like, holy shit, this is really challenging me. Like, thinking exactly which moves I'm using when. It's great. This game is really, really good. I think anyone who's into sort of XCOM or strategy, turn-based strategy games, should really pick this one up. Even hell, if you're just into Mario, I think it's a really cool Mario game. It's got a lot of character. The rabbits are silly and stupid in the best sort of ways. And these new characters called Sparks, they essentially become like elemental weapons that you can use in battles. But they're also characters in their own right, and they're quite funny as well. So yeah, it's a good time. I think it's apparently it's super much longer than the first one, which is kind of crazy because I thought the first one was already quite long. But at the same time, I've been playing, you know, 2-3 hours of this every day since we got it, and I'm just having the best time with it. Yeah,
I think one thing I've seen come through is a lot of people say you can see the love for both franchises.
Absolutely.
In this game.
Yeah.
And it warms my little heart, because if you remember back to when the first game was shown, that developer, I can't remember his name, but he was on stage talking about his game. He was like so excited because he's like, to work on this franchise, the Mario franchise, as someone who's from Ubisoft and, you know, working on a franchise he's loved since he was a kid.
He's like brought to tears by the fact.
Actually like such a wholesome, one of those nice, rare, wholesome moments on a live stage. And I think that is sort of the mantra that's carried that game and this game, where it's two unlikely franchises, but they end up complementing each other, and the result is just this really fun and like well-polished game.
No, there's so much love poured into this. You can tell there's such a reverence for Mario as a character and as a collection, you know, a universe. And then to tastefully like weave that in with Rabbids, which doesn't really have that sort of, you know, Rabbids is funny and kids love it, but it's not Mario, you know what I mean?
No.
But they've merged them in a way that's clever. It's not like stupid. You can definitely tell that was very evident in the first game, and I think that's why that first one hit so hard. And it's absolutely evident here. It's so good. It's a great game. Like, probably the best, one of the best the Switch will probably get this year, and probably in its lifetime. I think it's a good example of a sequel done very, very right. It like very meaningfully it evolves its gameplay, but also doesn't forget like what made the initial game fun. So yeah, it's still very much this sort of gameplay you'd expect from this sort of game, but it's got enough of a wrinkle there. It's got tons of wrinkles there that it's like, oh, this feels new. I'm learning new things. This is not just more
it's
of
not the
that.
Same thing. Yeah.
It's a great game. Looks great on Switch too. Runs, it's like 30 frames per second. Doesn't really matter. It's a turn-based strategy. The game and the worlds look really, really nice. So,
Switch
having a great time.
Surprise.
Got a great fucking soundtrack. Oh my God.
Nice.
Like, I mean, if you look it up, it's three incredible composers. It's Grant Kirkhope, who did, I can't remember now, Gareth Cocker did Ori and the Blind Forest and Halo Infinite. Yoko Shimomura, who did a lot of the Kingdom Hearts and Disney films and stuff. So
there's some nice mashups there.
Yeah, there is. Grant Kirkhope did a lot of Banjo-Kazooie stuff.
Okay.
So
that's quite a nice mix.
Let me tell you, music's good. Music's real fucking good. Oh, he also did the Viva Pinata soundtrack. Okay, well, there we go.
Like,
well,
there we go.
That makes, and that he did first, the first, yeah. And he scored the first game. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's a good time. The music's real good. So enjoy that too.
Love cool. to see it. That's Mario and Rabbids, the sequel.
In other games that are good, I think.
We think.
Wait, what are you talking about? I've totally forgotten. Yeah.
Tale Requiem. So let me just pull up the footage here.
We haven't finished this because this came out on Tuesday.
No. Yeah, so.
But I think we've both played like the opening hour.
Yeah. So the game. Yeah. Sorry, I'm repeating it, but yeah, the game came out on Tuesday. Remember, it's thick review season. There's a lot to play. So we haven't.
It's on Game Pass.
Yeah, also Game Pass. But we haven't quite sunk our teeth into this, but we both have played the opening hour just to at least see what this game looks like. And, you know, having only just recently played A Plague Tale Innocence, I want to see where the story goes.
I also only played it earlier this year, so...
Yeah, so shocking, that game. I'm not shocking, but surprised I stepped in it. Really good game. Came out in 2019, I think.
That game got a real second wind recently. People 100%. This game's actually fucking great.
Yeah. So, I mean, even then, when that game came out, again, like, I played it recently, but I was like, this game looks good. Mm-hmm. It plays well. It's a great story. I cannot believe this is made by, you know, an indie-ish studio.
Mm.
So, also, the way it ended didn't have a definitive, like, yeah, this is the end of the saga. It's like, where do they go from here? Mm. And yeah, so I was quite curious to see where it picks up. And the first thing that crossed my mind when I started this game is, holy shit, it is gorgeous. Like, this is unnecessary levels of detail that I did not expect from not a AAA studio.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could look at this and think that any of the big hitters put this together, but it's so sorry, audio listeners, you're missing out. But if you're watching the video version of this discussion, it is breathtaking. Like, it starts off, you walk through some lush fields, you have this view of a desolated castle in the distance. The shadows, the sunlight, it's just like, visually, what a treat.
Aggressively, I'm just beautiful.
floored that it looks this good.
It's a massive step up from the first game.
It's huge, but like, the first game looked good.
So for this to be so, like, so much higher. It is only on current gen consoles, so I assume that.
But
helps.
I get that now.
Yeah, this would never, should never fly on older consoles. And I also understand now the fairly high PC requirements that this came out, because I remember when they came out, people were like, "Oh, that seems a bit strange." Yeah, like, they quite high, yeah. But yeah, it's packed with detail. I think, like, all the little rocks on the gravel paths that you walk past, or the small little flowers on the fields that you run past, it looks very good. And then
it's wild
just
detail,
as it's so, like, serene and beautiful, the game, like, quickly hard cuts into, like, yes. Okay, cool, yeah, here's the depressing, like, fucking murder and death that you're used to from the first game.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that stood out for me when playing the first game, I actually knew very little about it, other than, like, it's a brother and a sister, there's a rat problem, wherever they are.
There's a rat problem. Yeah, the rat just murders a dog in the first, like, 10 minutes of that game. Yeah,
that game was a lot darker than I expected it to be. Like, I think we've mentioned it, even I've spoken to about it. The one of the most iconic moments is you starts one level on a battlefield, and you walk over thousands of corpses. It's quite like, holy shit, like, this is hardcore.
Really drives home, like, what is happening in this kingdom around you. Yeah.
And then it is funny because this game starts out, you know, innocently enough. It sets, I think, but I'm going to thumbsuck and say maybe 6 months after the first, after the first game ended. It's not too far, not too long
after.
Did they
actually specify?
I don't think they specify, I think it's shortly after, because Hugo looks like
he looks almost identical, and Amicia doesn't look much older. So
Yeah, but I love how they start off the game of like, oh, hey, this is a tutorial dressed up as if, you know, Emisi and Hugo are playing with Lucas. It's fun hide and seek and whatever. And then hard cut 10 minutes later to like, oh my God.
What the fuck happened here?
What the hell is going on? And yeah, I suppose the setting for this game from what we've, you know, at least seen in our 1 hour playthrough is that Hugo's powers, spoiler, if you haven't played the first game, the rats are... you know, a Hugo thing. The family's got a curse slash ability that lets them control the rats. That ability has reawoken amidst whatever the hell's going on in this opening castle, because I still don't know what's going on here. And yeah, I suppose the idea is to see how that plays out. What is going to happen to him?
Yeah, who are these new antagonists?
This poor innocent town.
Why are they wearing basket lids on their faces and talking about bees? Like,
but... yeah.
Is it going to be the rats versus the bees at the end? Like, what's going on?
I don't know. I'm very, very excited to sink my teeth into this game.
Same.
But I'm also interested to see how they handle gameplay, because for all intents and purposes, the first game was, oh no, you've got to survive the rats, to you get to control the rats.
Yes.
How do they evolve that? Like, I'm pretty sure it'll be a similar thing, but I'm keen to see.
Because that was a really cool moment in the first game where... it kind of like in the final third, it flipped the game on its head. It was like, cool, now the rats are with you and you no longer have to worry about enemies. They need to worry about you. And it was a nice reversal of power trick that they can't just redo that here. Like, no. It's got to be smarter, I think. So I have given a read to some thoughts on this game, and a lot of people seem to think that it's very good, but at the same time, quite safe, which... honestly, for a studio of this size and a publisher of this size, is entirely okay. I think that is the good bet to make. Is people like that first game, let's do a sequel that is very much what they expect, but what they will enjoy. And that's a-okay with me. I'm super keen on
Put all the budget into the visual department.
Yeah, they fucking did, clearly. My goodness, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, the last thing I will say about this game before we move on is that, so we're both playing on PC.
No.
There's something... Are you playing on Xbox? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So you could probably comment from your point of view, but I think we're having similar... it's not really a problem, but visually the game looks great, but it's not playing at a locked frame rate. So every now and then, like, you're probably getting dips to, let's say, like 50 to 55 frames per second, which isn't the worst thing, but it is noticeable. And I wonder if that's not an optimization thing, or
on consoles, you don't get an option. You just have one performance mode, and it's like an unlocked frame rate. So it's not a stable 60 or a stable 30. And I don't know what is going on, but even... connected to like a TV that does, you know, VRs, which is meant to smooth out all the frame rate little hitches and dips, there's something strange happening with how some animations play out. They just look jittery. And it's quite noticeable, I think, and it's quite distracting. I wouldn't say it's like a game breaking or a problem, but it is enough to like kind of yank me out of the moment, you know, when I'm like, oh, what the fuck just happened there, you know. So I kind of wish there was an option on console to just lock this thing to 30. Like, I would be fine with that, because that would probably solve a lot of the problems. But yeah, it's just something to be aware of, I guess.
But yeah, to be clear, not game-breaking, but just worth pointing out. I feel it's something that might over time be fixed. Maybe
probably
on console. But
probably. Yeah. There's been a weird week of discussions about performance modes and stuff like that. So, I mean, Gotham Knights... was only 30 frames per second and refused to have a performance mode, and the sort of reasoning given by the developer didn't really make sense. This game, for all intents and purposes, only has a performance mode, but it's unstable. So it's like, you know, maybe give people an option if you can. But we'll see. Apparently, Boy Simulator has many options, so that's great.
Nice. All that said, A Plague Tale starts off strong. Very keen to keep playing that somehow between all the other nonsense.
Pretty amazing that it's on Game Pass. I think it's that is quite a big win for Game Pass.
Reason number 4 million.
Is a bit of a bummer if you haven't played the first one, that got removed from Game Pass. So At least we'll that one should be the cheaper one now to buy.
Super
as opposed
cheap.
To
yeah,
the
I'm pretty sure it's yeah. it's in the $10 to $20 camp now. Maybe yeah. even $30.
And this
I'd
game
say,
will be on there for quite a while. I mean, I think it's only Rockstar that has taken games off after like 3 months. In general, they stay on for like 6 months to a year. Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, you have time to catch up on the first one. You don't have to worry about this one disappearing 100%. Super quickly. If it does disappear next month, it's not my fault. Just putting that out there.
I don't make
the rules. Phil Spencer doesn't listen to
Phil
me.
Phil Spencer like, makes the rules, not
Phil Spencer makes the rules. If he wants to yank it off, that's his prerogative.
I like to imagine that he's the dude in a meeting room. They say, Phil, how long should we keep this game? And he goes, 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
1 year. Mm, 1 year.
I didn't like that game so much. You can take it off tomorrow. It's
3 months. Yeah. Plague Tale. Play it on a Plague Tale Requiem. It on Game Pass. It's real good. Real
good. Yeah. It's good. Should we skedaddle over to game releases for the week?
Gaming releases.
We're looking at essentially all of the last releases up until,
I'm living in November, but we're in October still.
Yeah, October 31st, spooky day. It's the last real big release week in October. Can you believe it? And, you remember earlier in this, I think it was before we started recording, I was like, I think all the big releases are done for this year. I just looked at what's out this week.
Not to say that there aren't releases, but like I think God of War and Call of Duty are probably the last big triple. No. I mean, there's Callisto Protocol's coming out.
December.
Is it Dead Space or Callisto this year?
Callisto.
Okay, Callisto's still
there's
coming
out. There's still a new Pokemon coming out. There's still Spider-Man on PC coming out. There's still...
I speak rubbish. Ignore
Sonic Frontiers coming out. There's still...
Oh my God, that's also out soon.
We still need to play Grounded. There's Warzone 2.0 coming out. There's the biggest game of the year, Goat Simulator 3 coming out.
Is that this year? Okay, ignore me. There's lots still coming out.
It's a lot. There's a whole World of Warcraft expansion, if anyone's keen on that. Oh my God, Garfield Lasagna Party. I want to play that.
Take my money. Where are we now? We are talking about games from the 22nd of October. 2020.
No. 22nd. So it's mostly the 24th. Until October 28th, because the 31st is the next week, Monday. So we've got Icy Red on PC, October 24th. Cosmo Tier, Ship Architect and Commander, Steam Early Access. Mountain Blade 2, Bannerlord, October 25th. That's coming to consoles. I think that's been out on PC for a while. Nice. Victoria 3 coming to PC, October 25th. Robotry? I think that's how that's it. Robotry. PC, Xbox and Switch, October 26th. Gunfire Reborn, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, October 27th. Signalis, PC and consoles, October 27th. Dave the Diver, Steam Early Access, on October 27th.
Love
Paper Cut Mansion. Okay.
That sounds painful.
Yeah, it does sound painful. PC and Xbox, October 27th. Saturnalia, all consoles and PC and Switch, October 27th. Star Ocean, The Divine Force, PC, PS, PlayStation, and Xbox, October 27th. Mm-hmm. Warhammer 40K, Inquisitor, Martyr. Oh my God. PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, October 27th. Sackboy, A Big Adventure, finally coming to PC, October 27th.
Nice.
The Pinball Wizard, PC and Switch, October 27th. Arkanoid, Eternal Battle, PC, consoles and Switch, October 27th. Big one for the week, Bayonetta 3 coming to Nintendo Switch, October 28th. Factorio coming to Switch. Good luck to the Switch running that thing. Jesus Christ. October 28th. Resident Evil Village Cloud Edition coming to Switch, October 28th. Another big one for the week, Resident Evil Village Gold Edition. This is the edition with all the DLC. And obviously all the DLC will release piecemeal this week as well. And then
I was gonna say, isn't it wild to think that Resident Evil Village came out over a year ago now?
Yep. Weird.
Like last year, May, and now we're in October of the following year. What is time?
What a game.
It doesn't feel like I played it that long ago.
I know. It was last year, April, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was April, May.
It wasn't this year, though. It was last year.
No. Last year.
Last year, April,
May.
Yeah, that feels like ages ago. actually.
Sure.
Another big one for the week, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, which is kind of a weird one because if you've pre-ordered it, you already have access to the campaign. Yeah, so...
You can add us. Tell us how it is. You can review it for us for a
chicken. Yeah, strange
one. Give us your impressions.
PC, PlayStation, Xbox, also on old consoles, so yeah. Karen's Staircase, PC, nice. Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. Karen is that dude from Hades, isn't it?
Hades.
He's the dude who...
Look at the condom, yeah.
He's also in he's also in, what's that game? Spiritfarer. He's like the first dude you, like, you take over
very
from.
Briefly,
cool. That's all the games. Yeah. So much to choose from. Too much to choose from, one might say.
Gaming news. Should we get onto that?
Yeah, that's also not slowing down. What did we say we're starting with? I totally forgot.
We're talking about horror fans having a good old feast in 2023 because.
So should we? Let's get through the stuff that is predictable first. That's Resident Evil.
Yes.
So Resident Evil had a showcase on Thursday.
This is the wrong article.
And they basically went through what is coming in that Village Gold Edition, and also some details on Resident Evil 4. Mm-hmm. Next year. So first we got a trailer for the Winters expansion. This is a DLC expansion which will kind of act as an epilogue for Ethan Winters' story arc. And it stars his daughter Rose, who you meet Rose. Right at the end of Resident Evil Village.
Spoilers.
Rose. So this obviously takes place probably, I think, like 2 decades after the events of Resident Evil Village, because Rose is like, I think,
the epilogue was of the OG game. Rose is all grown up, about to do some shit.
Yeah, and she has some powers of some kind. Yeah. That's out this Friday. It can be bought separately. It will also come out with the gold edition. Included in this stuff, they also showed off the new third-person mode for the main campaign. So you can play in third person if you really want, which is strange to me because, like, there's a lot of moments in that game that
work
kind of require the first person, like when your hand gets cut off. Like, how does that work in third person? So
I think it's just a nice little nod to.
I guess, like, I don't think it's the preferred way to play the game. Then there's also going to be new content for the game's mercenary mode, including the ability to play as Lady Dimitrisse.
Tower over your opponents.
Yep.
Just cut them down.
Going to be great. Keen for that. We got a new trailer for Resident Evil Reverse. I totally forgot this was a thing.
Me too. I don't know if this game's going to be good, but I'm dying to just try it.
I super do not think it's going to be good. but yeah, the multiplayer online shooter Resident Evil Reverse coming out October 28th, so also this week.
Oh my God.
It'll be free for all owners of Resident Evil Village and the Gold Edition. It will support crossplay, and it has characters from basically all across
everything
Resident Evil
in the world
verse. If you have
so dumb,
Resident Evil Village, you can play this from October 24th.
Oh,
cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Capcom also announced a bunch of games coming to Nintendo Switch via the cloud versions. So we already know Resident Evil Village is coming via this week via cloud. But there's also going to be cloud versions for Resident Evil 2 Remake, Resident Evil 3 Remake, and Resident Evil 7. Arguably
all
the best
really
Resident
good
Evil
games. If you've not played them.
Very good games. They're also coming to Mac. Good luck running those on Mac.
I love it.
Oh, no, sorry. That's Resident Evil Village is coming to Mac. Not all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the creme de la creme.
Resident Evil 4 Remake. This is... I mean, this thing's out soon. It's like February or March. It's out. So I guess it was about time they started really showing this thing off. So we got both a story trailer, which, boy, really made that campy-ass story serious. it tried its very best to do that. But I think the big thing was the gameplay. The gameplay looked great.
Yeah.
I think it adapts the sort of more action-focused nature of Resident Evil 4 into a style that is very reminiscent of RE2 and 3, where it's definitely more survival horror-focused. There's a moment where you're running away from all the villagers in that main town square, which is like in the first half now of the game.
That's super early, yeah.
Yeah. And Leon doesn't have a bunch of ammo and he shoots a lantern onto a cow and then the cow stampedes out because it's on fire. So Leon has weaponized cows now.
That's the biggest gameplay change we can confirm.
Weaponized cows.
I did laugh because I saw it. I was like, hold on. That lantern's going to land in the car and then he shoots it. I was like, oh no.
Oh no, what has he done?
But then, sorry, on that, he also throws out this cheesy one-liner. It's like, you could bill me for that later or something. Yes. I'm like, why?
But that's what I love. All the cheesiness has kind of remained.
No, like, I know, but it makes me roll my eyes.
I love that in all the previews I read for this game, so many of them mention, they're like, yeah, his bingo line is still there, which is fucking incredible. Like, if you don't know, it's an iconic scene right at the start of the game where everyone in the town like kind of like leaves and goes away when a bell rings. And he's like, where's everyone going? Bingo. And it's just like, what the fuck are you saying right now? It's fantastic. I'm very glad it's still in there. There's a moment where Leon also parries the chainsaw enemy with his knife.
Which is hilarious.
So parries.
Yeah. Can we just appreciate that Leon, I mean, this isn't a remake thing, but Leon went from rookie cop in Resident Evil 2, it's like the best secret agent in existence.
Literally hired directly by the president.
By the president, yeah. A one-man mission. My favorite part of this is he's like, I'm here to save the president's daughter. I've got my pistol and 10 bullets. I'm like, why?
This story is absolute fucking nonsense and it is phenomenal.
But I'm here for
peak camp of the Resident Evil franchise. I like that they changed the like rated transmissions to just cutscenes that bounce between the two characters. There's stealth sections, it seems like. I saw early in this gameplay Leon was crouching
there's a
down.
Crouch.
Yeah, so that's completely new. I think there's, you know, just like 2 and 3, there's a lot being done to alter the gameplay while still maintaining the vibe of the first one. Like, this definitely feels like if Resident Evil 4 was released today, this is how it kind of would be. But at the same time, it's very recognizable as Resident Evil 4 and how ridiculous it can be. So,
and Capcom haven't missed the last few years. So really hope it looks good. I'm hoping it just,
you've got the thing where you can shoot someone and then kick them. It's great. And
roundhouse kick them. It. Here we go. Here's the cow scene.
Here's the weaponized cow scene. If you're watching the video stream, look at that. God, that poor cow.
Call me for the repairs later.
It's so good. It's so good. It's great. It also looks very good. I think
it looks good.
It's much darker, but not like a, oh God, okay, you guys just made this at night and grungy sort of way. It's like, it's still got the very orangey tinge to the towns. I'm so keen to see the castle with that. I forgot dude's name. The stupid Napoleon
dude,
looking.
That guy.
Is he old? He looks like a child. In the original, he looks like a child. He looks like a very short child, but he's like Napoleon.
I played RE for so long ago, so this is all.
I think he is old. I think he is old, but he just looks like a child to me.
So this is coming, and it looks good.
It looks very good. I'm absolutely going to buy this game again. It is out on March 24th.
So that's super
close. It is also.
Boop.
That's weird. It's out on PS4, PS5. Xbox Series X and S. No Xbox One mention here. And PC. Hmm. Interesting.
Well, there
you will
we
also
go.
Get the PS4 to PS5 upgrade free.
Nice. Love to see it.
Good guy, Capcom.
Cool. But cool. So 2023 got Resident Evil 4, but in a big surprise.
Yeah.
We're getting just one Silent Hill.
Fuck ton of Silent Hill. Oh my God. This is...
Who saw this coming?
Aggressively a Silent Hill. Like, this is crazy. Sorry,
was this a known thing? Because in my like just so much Silent Hill, because in my head it is like Silent Hill is dead. They haven't said anything for ages.
Been rumored for so long. Yeah. The rumors of Bloober working on a Silent Hill 2 remake have been going around for like, I feel like over a year now. But all of this stuff is a bit hectic. Yeah, I didn't expect
this much stuff.
Yeah, so we got, there was a showcase. It was like an hour almost, or just Silent Hill. So just to fly through some things. Yes, we're getting the much rumored Silent Hill 2 remake.
Made by Bloober.
It is being led by Bloober team. I have some issues with Bloober team. I don't like their games. I don't think their games are scary. I don't think they're good.
I have some issues with them. I don't like them.
Blair Witch was a bad game. The Medium was a bad game.
Nice.
Blair Witch. Do you know in Blair Witch, like, it's all psychological horror for a good short time in the beginning, like an hour or two. Not bad. It's tense. It's kind of creepy. It's weird. Then you fight fucking hay bales. They are just rolling around in the ground. And if they touch you, you die. What the fuck is going on?
Have I not played this game?
It's nonsense. And then I think the reason a lot of people have some issues with Bloober, especially with regards to Silent Hill 2, is Silent Hill 2 is kind of built around themes of mental health. And Bloober did a poor job of dealing with that sort of subject matter in the Medium. For anyone who's played it should know. So, yeah, I get people's apprehension. I've never played Silent Hill 2, so maybe this will be a good time to play Silent Hill 2, which is regarded as the best one in the series. So
The story exists, I don't know. Maybe it'll be okay at just adapting.
I mean, if this is sort of like a Resident Evil remake kind of vibe, then sick. I'm in. Like, updated gameplay mechanics, because, boy, it will need to be updated from the PS1 version.
Yeah.
It's going to be a PlayStation exclusive for 12 months, but it's also coming to PC.
PC.
Then we got another Silent Hill game developed by Stories Untold and Observation Maker No Code Silent Hill Townfall. It's going to be developed alongside Annapurna.
So I was like, Annapurna, don't miss all the time. The only time they miss is when they publish games called 12 Minutes. But other than that, Annapurna is really good. So this is interesting.
I think it's a good pairing. Observation has its fans as well. This one, there's like not much known about what this game is. So there's details coming next year, apparently.
Nice.
There's a new Silent Hill film being made, which shouldn't be a surprise considering the director kind of spoiled that this showcase was even happening last week by being like, shit. Yeah, I'm working on new Silent Hill. You'll hear about it soon. It's like, oh, okay.
Did you watch the original Silent Hill film?
I haven't. Apparently it has Sean Bean in it.
You have it. It is, I can't remember who acted it, but watch it. It's an actual good adaption of a video game. Like, at a time when video game adaptions were not good. You're like, it's a Silent Hill movie. It's going to be garbage. It was actually really good.
I didn't realize there was a second one. In 2012. Probably not good.
Didn't know either. I thought this new one was a sequel to this original.
Oh, it's actually got a very good cast. Sean Bean, Radha Mitchell. Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a watch.
Is it creepy? It's real good.
Is it weird?
I mean, I've watched it once or twice in its day and I was like, damn, this is hardcore.
Okay.
Would recommend.
Well, this sequel, Return to Silent Hill, is being directed by the same guy, Christoph Gans. Filming and casting are still happening, so this film's still a while away.
I need to rewatch this movie.
You know what I mean? This is the thing that we should preface, is I've heard a lot of people say this, and I tend to agree. If Silent Hill 2 remake does not hit, there is a strong possibility that none of these other projects happen. Konami will just be like, yeah, cool, that was a good try, bye, you know.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. There's another Silent Hill game called Silent Hill Ascension. It's described as a live, real-time interactive series in which players watch together as the story plays out, can change the outcomes and be part of scenes. This sounds like the pitch for Quantum Break.
I do not know what that means at all.
Handful of companies involved with this, including J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Games Dead by Daylight developer Behavior and DJ2 Entertainment expect a 2023 launch. I think this was one because there was a rumor that came out that was like, oh, there's this Silent Hill game, which is like almost like an interactive app on your phone where the game keeps messaging you.
Yeah.
So it could be that. That would be pretty interesting. But yeah, quite
this
creepy.
This is set in 1960s Japan.
No, that's the other one.
Oh, that's the one below.
This is another Silent Hill game. Now.
Oh my God. So there are five things announced. I thought it was four things.
So then the last
one. Don't mind me. Sorry.
The last one announced is just a new Silent Hill game called Silent Hill F. It's a new Silent Hill game set in 1960s Japan, written by a Japanese visual novel specialist. I can't say that name. Ryukishi 07.
Sounds like a gamer tag.
It sounds like a cool setting. I'm kind of down for that. There's no developer details on this one, so this game is probably the furthest out of any of them and the most likely to get axed if none of this happens. So
It should be a pity because out of all the projects, I mean, I'm keen for Silent Hill 2 Remake, don't get me wrong, but this one sounds like, take my money. Sounds super good.
Yeah.
So yeah, horror fans.
Horror lives 2023.
Horror does live.
2023.
Let's see what happens with Silent Hill. Cool. So that's all the scary news out the way.
Yeah. Should we talk about that Silent Hill? Final Fantasy trailer?
Yep.
Neither of us have watched,
but that's cool because there's a new trailer. So we can live react right
now. Kind of came out of nowhere. Matty just has to enter his birthday real quick so that he can watch the video.
Wow, did it start with year? Damn it. Come on.
Did you know that was the reason there was that confusion with Callisto Protocol's release date this week? Epic put up a thing that suggested it was being delayed to February, but what had happened is they had swapped the 2 and the 12.
Oh, yes.
Fix your shit, America. No one likes that date format. It's just confusing.
It's the actual worst. So where is this game out? Is this game
summer 2023? Yeah. And according to reports I saw after this trailer, it is in the final stages of development. So it's probably unlikely that it's going to move from there. But yeah, I reckon by June, July next year, we'll be playing this game. I'm fucking all in on this Game of Thrones with magic nonsense.
Street Fighter.
Strange ass combat, like more action, character action combat and big ass boss battles. This looks great.
With summons fighting really each other.
It looks beautiful as well. Like, I'm really does. Into this aesthetic.
Final Fantasy games generally always look good. And it's been, like, I know we've had Final Fantasy VII Remake, but shit, it's been a long time since Final Fantasy XV.
Look at these set designs. They are just...
Color me chef's kiss on this game.
Chef's kiss. Love it. The kind of, like... aesthetic of like more modern set design and clothing design within a medieval world kind of speaks to me a lot.
Oh my God,
is this Jack from Final Fantasy Chaos? My God.
It looks like him.
Final Fantasy VII was very much like a medieval kingdom in a future world, which was super cool to me. I thought it was pretty nice.
You mean 15?
15, sorry. Did I say 7?
Yeah.
I meant 15.
It was like 7 Noctis was the other way around. Boys. It's like this futuristic world with swords.
Yeah, no, it's the other way around. This trailer seems very story heavy and cinematic, so I'm not sure we're getting much from it without any audio. There we go. There's some combat. Oh my God, look at that.
Look at that.
So like you get combat. To fight big. I think a big part of these are the summons, or they're called something else here.
Every game they've got some other name.
Yeah, but they are kind of like each kingdom holds one type of thing. Yeah. Holds control of one. So they're a big part of the story.
Oh my God, look at that sword. That's Sephiroth levels of what they have.
It's good.
I'm keen on this game.
Very keen on this game.
I don't even need to see more trailers. I'm there. I'm all in. As a big Final Fantasy fan, you best believe I'm hyped for this.
Never forget that the main character is called Clive. Not even joking.
That is the worst.
Absolute worst name for a character. Clive. Cool.
Clive. We've got Clive, we've got Squall, we've got Clive.
Clive Rosefield. He sounds like a character from Resident Evil.
Yep, he does. I suppose let's just stick with Sony quickly for a second. Sony posted a Bloodborne tweet. Okay, so I'm going to come out and say, as a marketer, someone who lives in this world, this is just, oh, what the heck? Sorry, I know why my WhatsApp's there. I don't know where that came from. This is just a marketing thing where it's like, we're going to garner some engagement. Let's just post a thing. What game is this from?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's very clearly, oh, that's the cover, a portion of the Bloodborne cover art.
It was like almost immediately recognizable. Like,
yeah. And the idea is like, you go, oh, it's from Bloodborne. Except now Sony fans are like,
Are they teasing something?
What is going
something?
On here? Are they teasing a sequel? Like, what is going on here? But to the point where Sony actually took the tweet down, which is hilarious. So
I don't think this is like for anything. This is, like you said, a marketing thing. It's, like, it's guys, on Sony's account. It's not on PlayStation's account.
This is 100% an engagement mechanic. The idea is to make people go, oh, that's from Bloodborne. I'm going to comment Bloodborne. Social metrics, yay.
Some PR company not like in tune with how ferocious people are with new Bloodborne news. Just thinking, oh, this will be cute. You know, this is a fun engagement game.
But if this was any other franchise, like, would it have been a problem? Like, if they posted, if they posted the corner of Knack 2.
No one would give a shit.
Would people go, oh my God, Knack 3. Video game donkey be like, oh my God, Knack 3 is happening. Can't believe this. No one would have thought twice about it. But because it's Bloodborne, yeah, it's hilarious.
And people have been clamoring for news of a patch or a sequel or just
I do love this headline though. Sony post tone deaf Bloodborne tweet, chaos ensues, which was just like.
True. Yeah, 100% true.
Just chaos.
So I don't listen. I don't think it's coming to anything, and I don't think it ever was going to.
No,
but yeah.
Last pieces of news. Call of Duty won't be seen on Game Pass for a number of years, says a report in this article written by good pal Darren Bonethaz.
Love Bonethaz.
Doing some great gaming journalism.
So this report's. It sources Video Games Chronicle, who say that this is from Microsoft. Obviously, Microsoft is in the throes of trying to make its case against the Competition and Markets Authority in the UK, who are kind of like the biggest hurdle now because they seem to agree with Sony that Microsoft owning Call of Duty might be too powerful, too problematic. So in a footnote, it apparently references Phil Spencer alluding to prior agreements between Activision and Sony that would prohibit Microsoft from adding Call of Duty to Game Pass even in the event of the acquisition being approved. The quote says, the agreement between Activision Blizzard and Sony includes restrictions on the ability of Activision Blizzard to place Call of Duty titles on Game Pass for a number of years. And this could reference the three-year period that Microsoft said it would continue to honor its agreement with Sony, and could explain why Jim Ryan said that's not enough. So he wasn't really referring to, oh, we will still get Call of Duty after the fact. He's like, Call of Duty is going to be in fucking Game Pass after that. Mm. And it doesn't even probably matter then that it's coming to PlayStation. Like, that's it, game over. But at the same time, it's clear from this that Sony was paying Activision Blizzard to prevent that from happening. And that is exactly the sort of hypocritical nonsense that Sony has kind of been exposing itself as in these court filings. So, again, I say, if Sony has a big issue with games appearing on Game Pass, then that is not a problem that Microsoft needs to solve. It is a problem Sony needs to solve.
Yeah.
It needs to offer something better or on par. Maybe. And it refuses to do so.
Maybe Sony should just put in their own bid for Blizzard Activision.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you just solve that problem. Just buy it yourself.
Do a 180. Be like, we don't think they should buy it, but we should buy it.
We'll buy it. Yeah. When Call of Duty comes to Game Pass, though, that's going to be...
Yeah, it's a big problem for Sony. So even if they have 3 years to kind of figure out how they combat that, like, you know, how do they combat that? It's the biggest game in the world. So I get their, you know, them saying, like, even if we do figure out a way to put all of our exclusives on our Game Pass competitor, that's not the same thing.
No. Just like to remind everyone, in case you don't know, Call of Duty is a monolith that sells well always, despite being an annual release. Like,
it's the only game that this acquisition, you know, is problematic with. Like, if you remove Call of Duty out of the equation, no one would... Oh, well, you know, there'd be some opposition, but I don't think there'd be as
much,
fiery opposition to this. The problem here is Sony going, we don't know what to do, even if Call of Duty remains on our platform, which for all intents and purposes seems to be the case, because Microsoft is saying it would actually not benefit us to remove it from, you know, from PlayStation as entirely. Mm. But having it on Game Pass is something that PlayStation probably, or Sony probably, sees as just as bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, figure it out. That is not Microsoft's problem. I am of the opinion that that is not their problem. The problem that Microsoft has is keeping it on PlayStation to appease the Competition Commission. But how they choose to sell a product that they own is entirely not
up to them.
Their problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And then last piece of news this week. Nintendo's upcoming Bayonetta 3, overshadowed by a lot of controversy where oh my god, what is going on here? Oh no,
that's good.
Damn this Bloomberg article.
You can, if I'm not mistaken, an incognito browser will help you here.
Oh really?
Yes. Okay,
let's see. Please hold while we solve these technical difficulties. Oh no,
very sorry that we're not subscribing to Bloomberg.
Not this time. Oh my goodness. I've just got to copy paste this. But yeah, the long and the short of it is that Bayonetta 3 is coming out. Oh, there we go. That's weirdest life hack ever. Bayonetta 3 is out this week. If you're listening to this podcast on the day it is published. And leading up to this release, the iconic Bayonetta voice actress for 1 and 2, her name is
Helena Taylor
came out saying that the reason she's not in the game is because she was offered a pathetic salary. I think the number she threw out was $5,000 for...
I think it was $4,000, but yeah.
Was it $4,000 for her entire contribution to the project? Which at the time, so her video came out and it garnered millions and millions of views, and people were up in arms saying this is unacceptable, which... Mm-hmm. It is, like, if that's what you're paying your voice artist, like, for all intents and purposes, yeah, like, get angry. But it has since come out.
At the same time, she also kind of attacked new voice actress.
Jennifer Hale.
Hale replacing her in Bayonetta
3.
You're stealing my work type of thing, which is a bit like,
But it has since come out, because I think this happened last week, if I'm not mistaken. But it has since come out that there was a report or some other documents or whatever came out that she was actually offered more money, I think to the tune of $3,000 to $4,000 per a recording session over,
I think there was like four or five recording sessions.
And that was corroborated by the likes of Jason Schreier and one or two
VGC
other people.
Corroborated it as well. They said that's what they've heard as well.
So it's a bit weird.
It's become super messy. It's become, so on top of that apparently that's what she was offered, there was also, as part of the same report, that that's what she was offered, she rejected it and requested a six-figure salary, along with residuals, which would mean she would earn money from each of the sales on the games. Now, from what I've seen from other voice actors talking about their what they've been paid, and this is probably what has been super beneficial about this entire thing, is just shining a light on how poorly voiceover artists are paid. But it seems residuals are almost never a thing. Like, they're a thing of the past. They used to happen. They do not happen anymore. So maybe six figures is not outlandish. But at the same time, Bayonetta is not a series that sells well. It sold less than 1 million, the second one on Switch.
The fact that we're getting a third is like...
The fact that we're getting a third is a miracle, honestly, because Nintendo really could not give a shit about funding this game, I don't think. So I don't think six figures was ever going to happen, especially residuals. And I think maybe the extremeness of that request just made Platinum go, nah, we're good. And we're gonna look for something else. You know? So I don't know. For what it's worth, Helena Taylor denies these reports. She says that was never, she never made that offer, and the offer of 3,000 to 4,000 over 5 sessions was never made to her. So she's sticking to her story. Jennifer Hale did like some tweets about this reporting. So she did say she was under NDA, so she can't actually talk about it publicly. So take that as you will.
And she also came out publicly just to say, like she's under NDA, but just to keep in mind that Bayonetta 3 was made by a whole team of people. Like, don't forget that when considering whether you're buying the game or not, basically.
Yeah. And so I was listening to the Giant Bombcast, and Jeff Grubb is on there now, obviously. And he made a very good point that we might like to think that voting with our wallets actually does something. It very rarely does. All it does is impact the thousands of other people involved with said game, and doesn't actually impact the studio and its decision making, because if 100 people don't spend $60 on something, then they don't even care. Whereas you campaigning for something or making a big deal about something over a video, or just like Helena Taylor has done, she's garnered a huge uproar of people talking about this problem. That gets their attention. You know. So if you're going to be really mad about Bayonetta 3 and you're on Helena Taylor's side, which at this point is very difficult to tell who's telling the truth or who's got the right information. I'm not saying that Jason Schreier is reporting nonsense. I'm just saying that information could be muddied in this sort of process. It's not easy. And the same with Helena Taylor. She could be lying for all we know. I think if you are going to take a stand on it and be loud about it, then be loud about it. But if you were planning to buy the game, I think continue to purchase the game, because you're supporting a series that you love, and you not buying the game is not going to hurt Platinum in the way that you think it is. It's not going to help the people that you think it is either.
No.
So,
I do. I completely agree with you, but I do find the statement from, who's this? The executive director of Bayonetta 3, Hideki Kamiya,
from Sega, who blocked so many people on Twitter after this he ended up having his account suspended for multiple days.
But this is pretty damning. He called Taylor's allegations sad and deplorable.
And then when he was getting shit for it, he blocked tons of people that Twitter triggered like an automatic thing, thinking a bot had taken over his account, and he was like, it seemed he had deleted his account, but he was just suspended for 3 days. That's how aggressive that dude is on blocking. He is hyper strange on Twitter. So.
Pretty messy saga. On that, the, you know that meme you always keep talking about pushing the water back into the ocean?
Yes.
That's blocking people on Twitter. Like, what are you getting?
Are you doing?
Two annoying people, but you can't block thousands of people.
He's like, if you quote retweet me in an English tweet, I'll block you. It's like, what? Like,
okay.
It's so.
But when he so says crazy. That, it's his PA going, why would you say that? I've got so much work to do now.
It's such a strange thing. I don't know. He's very, very peculiar. So he also tweeted out something in English, so by his own rules, he should block himself now.
But then he quote retweets himself in English. That's
no, question. he said you should not reply to him in English. So if he tweeted in English, fucking gotcha,
how the,
come here.
How the turntables.
Yeah, how the turn, come block me now.
But yeah, on that note, that's gaming news for this week. Nice and strange. Some yeah. nice horror and then tons of
very
strangers.
Very up and down in terms of theming here. Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's gaming cool. news.
Gaming news. Now we can get to...
If you want to send questions. Us a question, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on all our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat. What up?
We have... let me just double check email, but I know we have a question on Facebook from good pal Gary Dunn.
Gary, asks, definitely not Dairy.
Dairy Gunn.
No bone thighs here.
Who asks, do you have a drinking game? That's it. That's the question.
I have not played a drinking game in years.
Oh, no, no. Do you what? Game and drink? Not a drinking game. Do you ever drink and game?
So oh, like, is that the question?
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you sit down to play the new God of War, do you crack open a beer and go,
crack open a cold one before I get called boy.
take a shot every time Kratos says boy. I mean, we could get into that territory. Do you play drinking games while drinking?
That
and
seems
gaming?
Problematic. You should probably seek help. I don't really, but that's because I don't really drink.
No, look.
I have the odd one here and there, but it's not regular at all.
Yeah, I've done it before. Depends on my mood, the temperature, and what I'm playing. But I'm not opposed to cracking open a cold one while I play a game. So I've done it on stream before, where I start streaming and I have a beer open.
But you're going to pull up a castle light right now. I'm like, Matthew, it is 10 in the morning.
I'm not opposed to drinking. I've got my whiskey in my head flask. No, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think, like you said, it's a problem if you drink excessively.
Of course, yeah.
You don't have to be gaming to know that that's a problem.
Yeah, I don't even drink every day. I know there are people that will have a glass of wine with dinner or a beer when they get home. I am not judging, but I find that excessive for my lifestyle. I can't do that. I will every now and then, and it used to be like once or twice a week. Now it's like maybe once every 2-3 weeks I have like a small whiskey while I'm playing a game or something, just because I'm like, well, I feel like a whiskey. Like, I have a bottle of whiskey that I opened maybe a year and a half ago and it's still there, so I don't drink it that often.
That is funny though, because I know Gary asked this question. I saw he tweeted yesterday. It was last night. He was playing, I think, Assassin's Creed Valhalla with a glass of whiskey.
Whiskey's good. Do you know why whiskey's a good choice? Low calories.
Mm-hmm.
You only need a little bit. Low calories.
Yes. Am I doing this right?
Yeah. Whiskey's a good time. When you're feeling the vibe, then you just have a little tot of whiskey, a little peaty whiskey if you're feeling up to it.
Honestly, I've got some bottles of whiskey that I have not touched, not cracked them.
Whiskey's
open
a good
yet.
Time. Usually when I drink now, it's whiskey because I have one or two and I'm good. Like,
have one or two and pass out because your tolerance
pretty
is
much
gone.
Yeah.
Can't have the third because you're just blackout drunk.
Yeah, I'm actually just like on the table sleeping at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. Every now and then, I will have a drink while I game. But I love how you heard drink and game. You're like, yeah, drinking games. I haven't played
that. I don't know. That's what I
heard. I haven't played.
If we're going to answer that, I like Kings a lot. Kings was always fun.
Nice. Okay, how does Kings work again?
I think it's like all the cards around the fucking cup, and then each card does something. Like, if you pick up a two, then you get to tell someone to drink. If you pick up a king, then you pour stuff in the middle, and the person who picks up the last king has to drink the middle. It's horrible if everyone's drinking
different games can things. Go south very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. But that is all the questions we got this week.
Cool. Well, if you want to ask us about drinking games, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat. And I know we've gone 10 minutes over 11 o'clock, so I'm pretty sure Lenska is halfway through her Portuguese lesson.
Her lesson was cancelled.
Oh. How fortuitous.
Call it the luck of the Irish.
The luck of the Irish. How fortuitous.
Luck of the Portuguese. But yes.
Yeah, that's been episode 204 of Checkpoint Chat. As always, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you and the support, and we'll be back with 10 billion more games next week at this rate. My goodness. Maybe there'll be 5 other Silent Hill games announced. Who knows?
Oh my God, you never know. Good Lord. Cool.
Thanks so much. Have a lovely week. We'll see you next time. Okay, bye.
Goodbye.